Blog Talk Radio.
This episode of HR Happy Hour is sponsored by Acquire, a leading provider of workforce planning and analytics solutions so powerful they should wear tights and a cape. We enable and streamline organizational charting, succession planning, workforce modeling, and strategic workforce initiatives. Visit Acquire CEO Lois Melbourne's blog at blog.acquire.com for her enlightening insight into current HR industry issues by way of Star Trek, The Fonz, and Ebenezer Scrooge.
Welcome to HR Happy Hour. Hello, everyone.
Hi.
HR Happy Hour, episode 53, Rethinking HR. I am Steve Bowes. With me, of course, the just about to relocate to another city, Shauna Morkey, the HR Minion. Shauna, how are you tonight?
I'm doing very well.
Fantastic. You know, you had that big news, that big announcement you made on the show last week of your impending relocation to Birmingham.
To the ham.
Fantastic news. I'm not sure we can top that tonight.
Do you have
any other shocking revelations for us tonight, Shauna?
No, I'm sorry. I'm fresh out of shocking right now. Give me a little bit.
Okay, fair enough. So I'll just throw it out there for folks who are listening. If anybody's out there tonight who has a big announcement, a big piece of news, some juicy gossip, go ahead and call it in. We'll have some time tonight to take calls, and we'd love for you to share your news with us as well tonight. So, Shauna, this is I'm really looking forward to the show tonight, HR Happy Hour episode 53, I think.
Oh, wow.
Is that right? 53? I think it is.
Yeah.
On July 8th, 2010. Our call-in number tonight is 646-378-1086. If you want to get on board tonight and ask a question or make a comment later on, please do by pressing 1 on your phone, and we will definitely take some calls tonight and hoping to get a few interesting calls and questions tonight as well. So, Shauna, I think we have a great show lined up for tonight. I'm excited
about
the show. Thanks, of course, to our sponsors, Acquire Software.
Thank you,
so great to us. So fantastic. They're with us once again. Tonight's show, Rethinking Talent. And this should be an interesting show. Some good conversation about what organizations and leaders should be thinking about, as they try to find and attract and retain, really, and engage the best talent out there in this sort of difficult environment. Still pretty tough out there, right? I mean,
yeah.
Except unless you're like a basketball player, 6'8", 250 pounds, and, right?
You're the pick of the litter.
Yeah, you can sort of call your own shots, but for the rest of us, it's still it's kind of tough out there. So hopefully we'll shed some light on some of the things that are going on in the corporate environment in respect to talent acquisition tonight. So let's just go right to it. We've got a couple of great guests tonight. We're really excited. They're longtime friends of the show, past guests of the show at different times.
Right.
Let's welcome them back tonight. First, I'd like to welcome to the show the great Susan Burns, the Chief Talent Strategist, Shauna, from Talent Synchronicity. You can find her on Twitter at talentsynch. S-Y-N-C-H. Welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show, Susan. How are you?
Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Shauna. It is fabulous to be here with you guys today. Appreciate you having me back on.
Yeah, we love having you on.
Susan, it's been a little while since you've been on, and Shauna, as you know, we've got hundreds, thousands of new listeners probably. Maybe, Susan, just a little bit about who you are and what you do for folks who may not know who you are.
Sure. So currently, I have my own consulting business, Talent Synchronicity, and I work with organizations to help them advance the value contribution of their talent acquisition and management strategies. And I like to frame that as it's helping them build personal and functional equity, which results in greater trust and greater confidence in the talent function and better results. And then I also have the pleasure of working with the fabulous Kevin Wheeler as Executive Director for the Future of Talent Institute. And prior to all of that, I spent a little over 20 years in both frontline business leadership roles and talent leadership roles with a variety of companies.
Great, great. Susan, thanks so much for that. I kind of like the fact that you're like associated with Kevin Wheeler in an institute. That sounds really cool, like very kind of official, like and just cool. I don't know, like you'd have a really cool like institute headquarters that you'd have your meetings in, and I don't know, like good letterhead that would be associated with that. Like the whole thing sounds very cool to me. So
yeah, we have a big flashy headquarters.
Yeah, awesome. So yeah, like Superman, right? Like at the North Pole. I mean, that's how I envision it. So. Susan, fantastic. Thanks so much for coming back on tonight. Next up, let's say hello to someone. Honestly, Shauna, this guest really needs hardly any introduction at this point, but we will introduce her, the queen, in my mind, of the best HR study in the world. She's the CEO, founder, president. She's everything at Unbridled Talent. Let's welcome Jennifer McClure back to the show. Jennifer, how are
Yay.
You?
Hey, guys. It's great to be back at the show. Usually kind of hanging out with the Twitter back channel causing trouble.
Yeah. Now you're first and foremost. You guys said, hey, let's do a show. And I said, sure. I bet you never thought I'd take you up on it. So
I know. I'm surprised. Yeah. Thought we'd probably worn out, or at least I have, maybe my
absolutely
hour.
Really, it's just like a bunch of old friends talking, right? Just us gals hanging out, right? Chatting.
Just us gals?
Yeah, of course.
Hey, I see from the Twitter stream that Laurie Rudeman is asking him for an update on Kevin Wheeler, and Susan and I talked today, so it sounds like maybe some people would be interested in learning how Kevin's doing.
Oh, yeah, how is he?
So if you don't know, Kevin had an accident a couple of weeks ago that resulted in a broken leg and a broken ankle. And surgery a week ago Tuesday. But now is doing great. I mean, he feels great. You know, it's just going to be a fairly, lengthy recovery. But he's doing good and feeling good and getting very creative in how to get things done when you don't have everything available to you that you're used to. But thanks for asking. Yeah, he's doing great.
Great, great. Well, thanks for Lori. Thanks for the question, and thanks for Susan. Thanks for answering it. So let's a couple quick announcements again. HR Happy Hour. Susan Burns, Jennifer McClure. Call in number 646-378-1086. Please call in tonight and press 1 if you want to get on board. We'll definitely take a few calls tonight.
We want to talk to you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do that. So let's get started with the topic tonight, rethinking HR. And so, I wanted to toss this out to Susan and Jennifer and just get your observations about, some of the really compelling sort of environmental, economic, societal factors. Like, why do organizations really need to rethink the way they approach, talent attraction, talent acquisition? What's really changed? Besides, I know there's the recession, but is it really that different today than it was just a few years ago?
Well, I guess, I'll take it from the broadest level and not to sort of minimize this either, because it can sound a little bit glib, but, the world around us is changing. It is not standing still. So it would be like saying that, you're going to ignore the internet because you don't think it's going to stick around, or you're going to ignore the phone, you don't think it's going to stick around. Those are both key things that obviously change the nature of business and the way that business got done and the way that people interact. And so I think we've got to recognize that while within an organization it may feel like nothing has changed, right, if policy or whatever hasn't changed, but in fact if you look at the speed of business and the rate of change, it's driving a tremendous amount of complexity. and certainly your audience and all of us that play in this digital landscape, potentially that more than anything, which is just changing the very nature of communication, is changing the way in which people interact and the way that information flows. And so to think that we don't have an opportunity to rethink then the role of talent would be to ignore all of those other things, because talents themselves as individuals function very differently in the world, and the way the business gets done is continuing to evolve. So now we've got to rethink what is the role of talent to make that business successful.
And I think, you know, in a lot of ways, there are still a lot of companies and talent management professionals, HR recruiting people, who aren't realizing, I don't know that it's a candidate's market so much, but the candidate today or the future employee, the potential employee, has so much more information available to them, and the rules really have changed because they can figure out whether or not your employment brand or what you're putting on your website is actually true. They can access people within the company to get referrals. And so kind of the old model of, well, when we're ready to hire people, we'll put a posting out there and we'll talk to the people that we're interested in, and then we'll never respond to those that we're not. That is, I think, something that a lot of companies are not prepared for, and they're also not prepared for what's happening when they don't get back with people, when they don't pay attention to the fact that people are able to find out about their companies. And too many of them are still kind of sticking their heads in the sand and saying, you know, we're going to try to figure out how to control this stuff. I'm not talking just about social media, but certainly that's a big piece of it.
And I would also add into that that people have tremendous choice today, right, in how they work, when they work, and where they work. And so in many cases what this recession is doing is it's really causing people to step back and think about what a sustainable lifestyle looks like and how valuable is time to me, how valuable is flexibility to me. Jennifer touched on, you know, this ability to continuously learn, and people are hungry to acquire and share knowledge. And those can be really beneficial for organizations, but at the same time it's creating this very different competitive landscape because the barrier to entry is so much lower. And so as you think about the impacts of this recession, it's causing a lot of people to have to think differently about how they work and the way in which they're going to want to work.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation, Susan, certainly. You know, Jennifer, I'd like to also touch back on something you mentioned about, you know, it's not necessarily a candidate's market, right? Because how could it be, right? Because, I mean, in terms of just the mathematics of it, right? The typical job, professional job in a decent sized city is going to have hundreds of applicants these days, right? I mean, but then at the same time we see, and there was just a piece, I don't know if it was in the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times just this week, about skilled manufacturing opportunities that were unable to be filled for various reasons, you know, that the organization could not find the right skill sets in their candidate pool, which had to have been in the hundreds or thousands, right? And so to me, it's kind of almost it's a paradox in a way, right? Like, why would an organization today in 2010 with 10% unemployment, why should they be more worried about, say, things like employment brand and how they're sort of developing an employee value proposition when there's so many candidates out there?
There's so many candidates out there, but if you're really rethinking talent and looking to hire the best and the brightest and to keep them for any period of time, and I do think that's a big piece of rethinking talent as well. We need to forget the notion of, you know, we need to figure out how to maximize the time we have with people and then, you know, find ways to move them in and out of the organization. But still, if you want the right people, yeah, there's tons of people out there that are available and a lot of good people, a lot of people with some good skills, but if you are just now starting to rehire, you want to try to get your hands on the cream of the crop. And some of those may be unemployed and available, and some of those may be the holy grail of the passive candidate, which I'm not real fond of the passive candidate idea myself. But
not fond of him or her specifically? Or
I don't buy the idea that that passive candidates are better than people that are actively looking for work. I think there are people out there that are the right fit, have the right skills, and are the right person for the job. They may or may not be looking. Let's not place one above the other. So, again, we still want to pick the right person. So even though more people are available, we still want to pick the right person for our organization. And those people are also being very cautious, even if they're unemployed, you know, in some cases, but certainly if they're actively employed, they're being very cautious about making moves to new jobs and new opportunities, and they're going to do their homework and investigate the company. So it's really important that your reputation kind of be a place they want to work.
Jennifer, I want to come back to something you mentioned there in a second. I just quickly, again, HR Happy Hour, you know, I'm compelled by the licensing board of Blog Talk Radio, which there really isn't one, to give out the phone number every 15 minutes or so or 10 minutes. So we're on 646-378-1086. Press 1 if you want to get on board and get in on the conversation tonight. It's just us girls talking, so please feel free to I know, it's the second time I've used that line. I better give that up. But Jennifer McClure is with us. Susan Burns is with us. And hopefully you as well. So please get on board tonight. We're taking you right up to the top of the hour. And, in fact, Sean, I've already decided, at least for me, I'm going to stay on the after show at the end of the top of the hour. Until the LeBron announcement. We're going to stay.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, that's important, and it's a talent acquisition, recruiting. I mean, that's a perfect, you know, example of what's going on for highly sought after talent. So, Jennifer, I want to come back to something you mentioned, and we talked about this a little bit on the pre-show, at least with Susan, which is, you know, folks being careful about making moves and seeking out, you know, their next opportunity. Folks who are already sort of employed and have managed to hang on through the recession. We've seen lots of reports and surveys citing statistics that suggest 40%, 50%, you know, some crazy high number of talented people will head for the door as soon as the economy starts to show signs of improvement. And I'm just wondering, like, to me just sounds like a very dubious number in general. Do you got any sense that that's really going to happen, or any indication at all from your contacts that you're dealing with that it's already starting to happen? Folks are looking to make jumps because they sense the recession is winding down?
Yeah, I definitely buy, you know, whether it's 40, 50%, I don't know. But I do think people are going to be ripe and ready to leave. And they already are. It's definitely, from being an executive search a year ago this time, it's a whole different world out there. People a year ago, if they were working, they were like, you know, I don't want to move. You know, either my wife is unemployed or my spouse is unemployed, so we can't find a job for her if we move. You know, there's a lot of reasons why people weren't willing to talk. Today they're willing to talk, but I don't think you've seen a sustained recovery yet. Plus, enough companies aren't hiring that it's really comfortable. So people will talk. The right people for the right opportunity will make a move that are actively employed. But at some point, whether we're going to have a double dip or whether we're on the upswing of coming out of the only dip, it's just still a little tentative, I think, for both candidates and employers. In my experience, what I'm seeing is employers now that are posting jobs or are engaging recruiters to go find people, they're still very, very tentative. They end up interviewing people 5-6 times. They want to see more candidates. They struggle with making a decision. So there's still not that real strong, robust, hey, we're back kicking, hiring. And I think when that happens and people see that companies are actively hiring and there's an active job market out there, you will see quite a bit of exodus. Good and bad employees. You know, probably most of the bottom layer is going to be looking because they've always been looking, and there's going to be some superstars out there that just they're tired. You know, they've been through it. They went through it with this company. They saw the workforce get cut. They had to do more with less, and so it sounds like a great thing to do to make a move.
You know, it sounds a bit like, you know, the scenario you described reminds me a bit of like a junior high dance, right? You got the guys on the one side and the girls on the other side. Everybody's kind of circling, but no one's really talking to each other.
Aww.
No one's really making that move or that connection, right? They're all afraid to.
Yeah, we're ready to go to high school probably about now, and then maybe we'll get to college first.
Yeah.
Just a free fall.
So let's take a call. We have a caller who wants to get on board. Let's do that right now, and we'll move into some of our next topics about some of the specific things that organizations can do or should be thinking about doing to try to to try to differentiate themselves and take advantage of these conditions. So let's go to line 9, area code 612. You're on the HR Happy Hour.
Hey guys, it's Paul the Bedden.
Oh,
hey.
The newly 40-year-old Paul DeBettis.
Happy late birthday, my friend.
Hey, the other side of the hill looks the same as the other side did four days ago, so I'm still okay.
Good.
Hey, I got a proposition to run by you. 01 to 03 were the worst 2 years of my search firm life, and 03 to 05 were the best 2 years of my search firm life, and I would suggest that that was because when corporate America let go of HR and their internal corporate recruiter folks, that they weren't thinking about coming out of the downturn. They weren't thinking about creating relationships. And then they got caught, so to speak, with their pants down. I mean, I had a field day for 2 years because they were trying to catch up. And I'm wondering, is that now what we're starting to experience? Because I'm seeing here in Minneapolis, there's been a definite shift in the hiring over the last, say, 10 weeks. And we're already seeing companies saying, we can't find some of the right folks. I mean, now, granted, certain skill sets, certain industries, but they weren't saying that 3 months ago, and they're already saying it now. And I'm wondering if some companies aren't just going to be caught behind the curve again.
Oh, that's a great analogy because, you know.
Wait, analogy, getting caught with their pants down?
Well, that too. But if you think back.
Maybe they're not even wearing pants yet.
Oh, that's a different show.
If you think back to what was happening post 9/11, people were not moving, you know, for very different reasons. You know, I mean, obviously there was a huge economic downturn, but it was the shock of that plus the shock of 9/11 and people just sort of thirsting for stability. But by 2003, it, you know, as soon as people were comfortable that there was some more stability in the market, it just opened up like gangbusters. And so that goes exactly with that timing that you were talking about. I actually think this time around, it can be more significant. I mean, Steve shared some of those numbers in terms of intent of people to leave. You know, the other thing that they've been tracking is the decrease in people's engagement in their work. And increasingly, the workforce has become more and more disengaged. And then, you know, I've even heard some people say, you know, who's better off, the person that's been laid off or the person that stayed on the job because of cost cutting, right? And they've been, you know, overworked, if you will, and they're no longer sort of in charge of their own destiny. So that's part of what's driving this. But, you know, it's interesting, and it just kind of speaks to human nature, right? In terms of what compels companies to change or people to change. When you know you've got this down cycle and you can be investing in strengthening your talent acquisition process, although it takes this, you know, this trigger, right, this dramatic push to be in back in crisis mode to have to start to do something again. And then it's hard to build that up again when you're trying to now recruit feverishly and go after the talent you need and try and rebuild.
And I think, you know, to Paul's point as well, will they get caught with their pants down? Of course they will, because it's typical in corporate America when times get tough, the first things to get cut are, you know, learning and development or training and development, whatever you want to call it, because we're not going to spend money training people. So that's like the first thing to get cut. The second thing to get cut is usually recruiting because we're not going to be hiring people. So let's get rid of all the recruiters and stop investing in, you know, recruiting needs. And then sometimes HR even gets squeezed in that. Unfortunately, when things start to pick back up, you know, in my experience, they aren't the first to be hired back. You know, the first groups to be brought back are, we need some salespeople. Let's get some salespeople in here to make some money. And then, oh, we got to figure out how to market our product and rebrand ourselves. And then they get behind, and it's like, oh, crap, we need to hire a bunch of people.
And Jennifer, that sort of hints at, right, what CEOs and leaders kind of consider are important functions in the organization, right? You know, just like in your own personal life, what's the first thing you cut, you know, when times get tough, you know, and that's probably the last thing that comes back as well, right?
Sure. I mean, if you're a training and development professional, you know, you can be great and do great things, and companies should keep those people on board, but in reality, you're basically a journeyman. You're going to go with the swing of the economy. You know,
right.
If it's down, you're the first to go. If it's up, you're not the first to come back.
Oh.
Yeah, absolutely. Paul, hang out with us if you care to tonight. I know, as you know, Paul, I can speak from experience, as you get a little older, it's harder to stay up late, but, you know, hang out with us.
I figure if you can. I'll hang out because there at least needs to be one fellow with all the girls tonight.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. That was unfortunate. I probably trotted out that line one too many times, and I got some negative feedback on that. But
as long as you've got your pants on, I'm fine.
Yeah, that's right.
Good thing it's not streaming video.
It's early, you know, it's early, so we'll see.
The pants come off later.
No comment. So I want to ask Susan, Jennifer, Paul as well, if you care to chime in. So we've sort of established, okay, recession and lots of churn, lots of lower levels of engagement. Let's just take as an assumption that the fact that lots of people would be willing to look once they feel like economic conditions change enough to make making a jump sort of not such an unnecessary risk. What would you do as a leader, an HR leader, or just an organizational leader or running a company? What are some of the things you would start doing now to try to react and try to head that off to, A, to continue to attract the right kind of talent you need, and B, and perhaps more importantly, to retain that top talent that you're really starting to worry that might bolt for the door?
Susan, do you want to go first? Or?
Go ahead.
Jump right in.
So I think it's always important, and certainly it defines the leadership of the organization. They really need to be looking internally as to, you know, are people, for lack of a better word, engaged? Do we have issues in terms of, again, for lack of a better word, employment brand? So what's it like to work in this organization? Are we focusing on developing leaders, and are we focusing on making sure that the people aren't carrying their weight, you know, aren't here? Not just because it's bad times and we don't want to rehire. So, you know, really talented people want to work with really talented people, and they want to work for strong leaders. So there's a lot of internal focus that I think the leaders of the companies need to kind of look back inward, because they've been focused on the balance sheet, and they still need to. But are we doing the right things as leaders? Are we developing our people? Are we making sure that we have a track for the superstars? Are we making sure that the B players and the people that we need in the middle are doing what they need to do and getting what they need? And then we need to be dealing with poor performers and making sure that we're not letting them drag down the rest of the workforce. So if you do that, that's obviously going to help with being able to publicize that your place is a great place to work, and the word of mouth that's going to be on the street, and it's going to make your organization more attractive and make you more ready to hire, in my opinion.
Susan, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree with what Jennifer said. I'd also go on to say I think that there really needs to be an awakening to recognizing and celebrating these interdependencies between business and talent acquisition and internal talent management and external talent management. And we have to kill off the silos. You know, it just creates so many inefficiencies. And there's too often times that we still see that there's a struggle between talent acquisition and HR, and there just really isn't room for that. You know, nobody really wins in that game. And so I think that has to be a clear piece of becoming more agile, becoming more effective in developing the culture. And so there's clarity around what that culture is. And really from two perspectives, understanding, you know, being brutally honest and saying, here's what our culture is today, and not just having leadership say, okay, here's what it is, but really asking the workforce, you know, what is our culture, and soliciting feedback, and then defining what's that aspirational culture, where are we trying to go, and how does that map to some of these sort of new attributes of great competitive business, because that's really shifted as well. Creativity is now one of the most important skills of leadership, and that's happening because of some of these other things we talked about, right? Speed, complexity, competition, and there has to be sort of an awareness of that, so then you can get to this place of saying, well, now how do we recruit for that? How do we develop that internally? What does that look like? What does that mean for us? I think the other piece that's really key is that we've got to sort of close this gap, if you will, between, you know, sort of what life feels like, and, you know, when you're sort of a big piece of this external social landscape and what behaviors look like there, and then what happens when people come into a more closed, controlling environment, which can be the nature of many larger organizations. So, you know, I'm a huge fan of social recruiting, and I think that there's a lot more that companies can do with that when they think about the way that the talent function is structured and the role that the talent function plays. But if you're going to do that, you don't want to have a disconnect then when somebody comes in where they can't access some of those same tools. Or, even more importantly, is there a collaborative culture and a collaborative platform in place that allows people to easily connect and share ideas and give voice, right? And so that they're creating something. So I think that there's a huge opportunity for companies to really rethink this, but it has to, in some ways, it has to start with the HR function, and then there has to be key buy-in so that it's something that existing employees as well as new employees are able to realize once, you know, that they can see it, they can describe it, they know what it is.
Jennifer and Susan, you guys made some great points. I took a few sort of notes down, and I want to come back to them. And, Paul, I might want to circle back to you as well if you're still with us. Because I'm looking for work, actually, Paul, as a social media recruiter myself. So
that was a great post today, Paul.
Based on some of your thoughts. So we'll come back to that. This is HR Happy Hour. We're talking rethinking talent. Our guests are Susan Burns, Jennifer McClure, Paul DeBettings out of nowhere joined us tonight. So thanks, Paul. Our call-in number is 646-378-1086. Please press 1 if you want to come on board and ask a question or make a comment. Let's take another call right now, Shauna, and then I want to circle back to a question based on something Jennifer mentioned about sort of career paths and sort of engagement as well. So let's take line 10. Mm-hmm. Country code 44, you are on the HR Happy Hour.
Hi, Steve.
Hey,
Jennifer.
Hey,
Jennifer. Hi, Evan. You're sad it's late. It's still early days for you. Very good, very good.
I'm a young man, Bill. I've got a lot of energy. I know.
I'm calling a bit late, so I've been listening to the last 10 minutes of the show. But there's a lot of talk about what culture should be. For me, the most important thing about culture is just knowing what it realistically is and getting the hiring bit right and hiring to culture, because it's much easier to hire the right people than it is to change your culture. I just wondered what the panel thought about that.
Well, I agree totally. You need to understand your culture. And I said, I think the culture of what we've been able to do in the past is to tell people what we want our culture to be, when in reality, in many cases, it wasn't that at all. But, you know, on the website, we splashed across these slogans, and we had pictures, you know, stock photos of happy employees and people jumping up and down. Well, that's not reality. So I do think it's time. You know, we've been through a lot. There is some hopefully light at the tunnel, and that's why I do think the leaders of the organization have to kind of look inward and say, what is our culture? Is it the culture that we aspire to have, that we want to have in this organization? Does this culture match the type of talent that we need to hire in this organization? And if not, then really spend the time and the money and the effort and get the right people on board in order to do that. You know, and China Gorman asked about, well, in large companies, maybe this is, they're doing that already, but what about the mid-sized companies? Well, I think in the mid-sized or smaller companies, it's certainly, quote-unquote, easier to do that because it's fewer people involved and it's not as big of a machine. We can look around and we can say, look, you know, we have some things within our culture that we need to fix. And you have a shorter line to getting that to happen. And HR plays a really important role in that. You know, what is our culture? What do we need to look at? Who do we need to get involved? And I like to call HR, I know I've been smacked for this before, I like HR to be the culture captain. You know, not responsible for the culture, but certainly kind of looking out and saying, do we have holes? Do we have leaks? What do we need to shore up? And it's going to be critical for people to be doing that now so that when this job creation comes back, and it will, and in the 40 to 50% of employees that are currently working do this mass exodus, that they're ready and they have a culture that they're able to attract the type of talent that they want.
You know, Jennifer, I'm just going to play devil's advocate a little bit, and, you know, Bill, perhaps you want to chime in as well.
If you do that, I'm just going to start talking about Zappos.
No, you're not. I, you know, just Jennifer brings up Zappos, right? In the pre-show communications, I said I will not have anybody talk about Zappos tonight because I'm not going to hear about their fantastic culture. They can't be the only one. So,
right.
My question is about culture a little bit, and here it is. It's like everybody talks about culture, right? Most organizations sort of try to define what their culture is and what they stand for and what they value, but. I mean, it's one thing to sort of say what it is and to document what we think it is, but it's quite another to sort of really live up to it. You know, it's quite another to only bring in people who sort of fit your culture and to weed out people who are already inside the organization. You feel, while they may be successful at what they do, they sell a lot of widgets and they're technically very proficient, but they don't quite match the culture. It's another thing entirely to send those people out and. Do you think that there's a sort of a break or a discrepancy between what lots of organizations sort of claim their culture to be and how they actually sort of act and behave and how they sort of attract and hire and reward people?
Absolutely.
The majority of companies don't know what their culture is, Steve, I think, from a recruiting point of view. When you go and talk to people and you ask culture-based questions, but my view goes beyond that. And I actually think every culture is fantastic as long as you hire to the right culture. That's the key bit, getting the hiring right, getting the right people in the organization.
And I definitely think there are a lot of organizations out there that, you know, say one thing when their culture, you know, I can think of one in particular that I'm very familiar with. They talk a great deal. It's all over their website. It's in their core values about work-life balance, you know, making sure that you work in order to provide for time to live. But the culture and what is known out in the community and the industry is that it's a turn-and-burn environment. They require lots of weekend work of their staff employees. They are required to work many, many hours. They have to be on call 24/7, but yet right there when you walk in the building, hanging up on the wall is this, you know, work-life balance thing. And the CEO is a little bit out of touch because he has great work-life balance. He comes and goes as he pleases. And so that leadership, getting in touch with what, if we say it, we need to make it happen. We need to make sure that we are willing to make the changes in our business to match the culture. And if our culture isn't that, the worst thing you can do in the age of social media and the message being able to spread quickly is not have something that matches up. That particular company that I'm thinking of is having a real challenge. They've been hiring throughout the recession. Hundreds of people, and they're having a real challenge with getting people to join their company because their employment brand is so tarnished that they can't hire people even in this economy.
But why should you change your culture?
Because in their case, they can't hire people.
That's for enough talk.
So, Bill, the question I'd have for you is that if a company, you know, I agree with you, a company has to be true to who it is. But if their culture is, say, out of date, let's just say that they don't value openness, that they don't value collaboration, and yet the type of people that they're trying to recruit because of the talent that they need do have those values, do they then have to make a choice to say, well, we either have to find people that are like us and train them, or we have to recognize that there's an opportunity for us to evolve and adopt some of these behaviors and beliefs and values and figure out how we're going to make that happen.
But that suggests, Susan, that everybody has the same values, and that's not the case. There isn't – I don't think there's a blanket set of values. The thing for me – I worked in a command culture for 12 and a half years, and lots of people would never survive there. What I can say is a lot of people who left that organization after 5 or 6 years couldn't work out of a command – structure. It's almost like leaving the military.
But to your point, Bill, though, the recruiting and HR organization should, if that's the culture that the organization, and again, I can think of some good examples here that have a kind of militaristic style leadership culture, they kind of follow that, they're well known for that, they really then need to pay attention in their hiring to asking the right questions, maybe doing some assessments, letting people see what the work is like and talking to them about where they're successful so that they are matching people. There's a culture for everybody. yes, you can have different values, but if you have values in your culture, you need to hire to those values and make sure that people are a fit for those. And that's kind of the new age of talent management. Before it was, we have an opening, let's hire somebody. I think it's
it was skill matching rather than culture matching.
Right.
I agree with that.
And
now,
like, Sexy Thinker on Twitter just said it's, you know, about lifestyles, not necessarily culture. People are really into living a lifestyle, especially they've come through a lot of difficulty recently. So there are a lot of people that want to live and behave differently than they have in the past. So how can you match people, the lifestyle that they want to lead, to your culture? There's some people out there that want to work really hard, make as much money as they can, and, you know, just bust their butts. Well, there's a culture for those people. They need to find it, and the company needs to find those people.
And the company needs to reflect it in its communication.
That's,
you know, that I agree with.
The challenge of HR and recruiting is we really do. Yeah, you have to skill match, but you really do have to culture match.
Let's take
no
a pause.
Point in changing just
Susan, hold on for 1 second here. I just want to reset. I want to get back control of the show here. You know, Borman comes in and everything goes off the. You know, I have a script, Borman. I prepare for the show. So.
Yeah, you're
I'm
messing
going
him up, Bill.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much. This is HR Happy Hour. We have Susan Burns with us, Jennifer McClure with us, assorted guests who've called in as well. Our call-in number is 646-378-1086. Please press 1 if you want to come on board. We will have time to take a few more calls. And on Twitter, of course, should I mention this again, Sean? There's been loads of tweets tonight. So, Sean, is there anything you have on the Twitter stream that lately that you want to highlight to our listeners?
Just that that a lot of people are saying that they don't care about LeBron.
that you know, to me, you know, and I don't want to call her out because she's fantastic, but I will. Lori, you're wrong about sports not reflecting, you know, workplace and culture on your post today. It's completely about culture and workplace and management and leadership. Sports is a perfect metaphor for all that. So the LeBron scenario to me is an absolute classic recruiting scenario. So we're gonna hang out on the after show.
It's your show, so we're gonna let you have that opinion.
don't you think, Jennifer? No, you don't think so. Sports and the metaphor in sports in the workplace.
Not for every culture. I think that there are many, many different types of corporate cultures out there, and some of them the sports analogies fit really well, but some not so much.
Yeah. Hey, so let's transition a little bit too. So we've talked in and around a lot of different topics, a little bit more about culture than I sort of expected. And Sean, perhaps we need to do another sort of organizational culture type show.
Oh yeah.
Because every time we talk about it, you know, people get really enthusiastic and interested in it.
Totally.
I want to ask Susan and Jennifer about just. What examples do you see out there in your experience or just from what you have observed or from events or readings that you've done about what organizations are really doing this right? Like, what organizations are navigating this new landscape, this new economic and societal landscape for talent, really sort of making the right moves and sort of positioning themselves, you know, for success going forward? And you're not allowed to say Zappos either.
Oh, and then I'm out.
You know, I don't know that there's any one company that's doing it all. And I think that makes a lot of sense, right, because there's too much going on to say we've nailed it across the board. What's encouraging and really exciting to me is I think that there's a lot of companies that are trying different things. And that in and of itself, I think, is a new value, right? That idea of experimentation and a little bit of risk-taking. And so some of the companies that I'm really intrigued by right now is that, you know, we were just on site with General Mills, the Future of Talent Institute, a couple of weeks ago. They've got some really cool stuff underway and how they're playing with workspace that facilitates collaboration along with flexibility. Best Buy, I've been a huge fan of. They're always doing some really great things that, you know, foster more internal collaboration as well as exciting their people about getting more connected with the consumer. Starbucks has done some great things. If you look at their My Starbucks and how they're connecting, and then, you know, there's obviously a change there in terms of how internally, right, that information is brought in and digested and then operationalized to a degree. They're also doing some very cool stuff in recruiting. Lego is another cool one to look at in terms of how they're rethinking the way in which they collaborate and interact. And then always a big fan of IBM. You know, they're just, I think what they created with Beehive, which I think has been renamed. I want to say it's maybe called Connect, but I'm not positive. But they're really bringing together this idea of social collaboration and the ability to contribute and put ideas out there and, you know, ease up that flow of information. And I think that's really important to people. And granted, it's not all, right, to Bill's point, you know, it's not the same for everybody across the board, but I think companies have to know the space that they compete in and the type of talent that they're trying to attract and do things that is going to help facilitate success in that environment.
And to give some smaller company examples, you know, just that I'm familiar with, of course, I don't necessarily know in detail about their culture, but just from reading and knowing the people involved, I think Chris Dunn's doing some great stuff at Daxco in terms
Chris
of...
Chris Dunn? Wait a minute, you're calling out Chris Dunn?
Yeah.
Whoa, all right, fair enough.
I think that, you know, if you read his blog, and of course I've sat through some of his, you know, sessions at conferences, and of course I know Chris as well, I think he's really... ahead of the curve in how he's thinking about performance management and recruiting and the culture that, you know, he was brought in by the CEO who is a big proponent of the culture that they want to have, and he particularly recruited Chris to match the culture and with what he wanted and where he wants to take the company. And I think Chris has been given, it appears, a lot of freedom to do some really cool and interesting things, and they're around 100 employees. So, you know, that's an example of a small employer. And then another fistful of talent shout-out, I think Jessica Lee is doing some really cool things at APCO, and they're, I think, 200 employees.
The fistful of talent people didn't sort of pay you or anything to...
Yeah. Good.
I'm the number one fistful of talent fan, but...
Because if you start telling me how, like, wonderful Tim Sackett is before the
no.
end of the show, then okay.
I'll draw the line. And
oh,
I'm going to mute the line. Hey, we've got a couple more folks who want to jump on board on the phone, and let's squeeze them in before we have to wrap up. Let's go to line 11.
Right.
Area code 918. You're on the HR Happy Hour.
Hey, guys. It's Brian Wimpin with Drive Through HR.
Brian.
Hi.
And by the way, I wanted to catch this so much. I'm sitting at a dinner meeting over on the side of it while it's going on, listening to your show.
That's awesome, Brian.
Big fan. Plus, Shauna said she'd kick my ass if I didn't do it. So.
Hey, don't start acting like I'm all violent and stuff. I'm very sweet.
Whatever. I just wanted to give another example. Is U.S. Cellular, that's kind of a regional, kind of Midwest regional company. They're ones that are doing, they're probably doing one of the best current, their diversity and inclusion strategy actually has been completely woven into their performance management, you know, both strategic, tactical, and it's one of the few companies that have really, I mean, that is part of their strategic goal, and you get compensated on helping them get closer to that goal with their, you know, their diversity and inclusion strategy. So overall, it's a really kind of, it's one of their pillars of success is to achieve that goal in their overall talent acquisition, human capital management strategy. So I just wanted to give those guys a shout out because it's really, really impressive what they've been able to do over the last 5 years with that aspect. So anyway, and you guys are all awesome. I just want to throw that in there.
Brian, thanks so much for that. I appreciate the call, and thanks for breaking away from your meeting there. Brian, like, sort of shaming the rest of us. You know, he's still working, Shauna, while the rest of us are kind of messing around here on a radio show. So Brian's still hard at work, which is fantastic. Brian, thanks so much.
Okay, thanks, guys. Bye.
Let's go to area code 314. You're on the HR Happy Hour.
Hi, everyone. It's Trish McFarlane.
Hey, Trish.
Hi, Trish.
Oh, hi, Bill.
How you doing?
I'm good.
Sorry, it's Joe. I'll let you carry on.
It's just Bill and I catching up.
I know.
I just now got to listen. Unlike Brian, I didn't get to listen throughout a whole dinner, but I just totally bailed on family dinner at Red Lobster to have a chance to call in and at least catch part of this. So I'm like in the parking lot of Red Lobster. I'm so dedicated. So
awesome, Trish. We love you for
can't,
that.
Can't wait to hear the full show tomorrow on the replay, but at least wanted to call and say hi, and I really love the topic and can't wait to hear more about it. So thank you.
Thanks, Trish. I appreciate it. Those,
thanks,
you
Trish.
Know, unrelated to sort of rethinking talent, I will say those cheesy biscuits are really good, right?
Oh, yeah. They are.
They were great, and they had a really awesome daiquiri with, like, mango and strawberries, too. So that was a plus tonight.
You know since we're completely off the plot here, Shauna, we should, like, before the summer's over, before we get into, you know, the real sort of working season and back to school and all that, we should maybe squeeze in a show in August of, like, I don't know, like favorite restaurants or music.
Ooh, just something silly.
Yeah, like a summer vacation kind of show, or what I did on my summer vacation.
We totally
something like that. Let's figure out a way to do a summer vacation kind of show and talk about
most
that
definitely
before we have to get to real, you know, sort of serious minded topics. So all right, so we got about 10 minutes to go. HR Happy Hour, Rethinking HR. I'm not sure if we solved anything yet, but we've had a lot of great discussion. Huge Twitter back channel tonight, so real big shout out to all the folks who are out there listening and tweeting. Big thanks to our sponsor, of course, Acquire Software, for supporting the show, and Lois Melbourne and the whole team there. Huge props to them. So a few minutes left, and I'll throw this out to Jennifer and Susan, either one. Okay, you're in charge, Susan. You're in charge of talent acquisition, you know, at a big Fortune 500 company, you know, facing the reality we're in now, but your need in your organization to continue to attract skilled talent, motivated talent, culturally sort of aligned talent. What are some of the things you would do to try to make sure that your organization had that supply of talent and could retain that talent that it needs?
Well, let me actually just clarify one thing before I answer that, if that's okay. I was just watching some of the tweets, and I think because we got so heavy into the culture conversation that when we came back to idea, you know, companies that are doing this well, at least the companies that I was speaking to are more broad-based than just culture. There are companies that I think are doing a really good job rethinking talent in general. So I just want to clarify that around the culture piece. So now that I get to run my talent function, you know, I've been rethinking this a lot, and I really believe that the talent acquisition team is really in a position where they can operate as a hub for talent resource management. And that as companies are trying to figure out more sustainable ways, right, to grow again, because they don't want to get in the situation where they've got this sort of excess of talent. So, you know, if things are still quite fragile, which they are, you know, there needs to be a more sustainable way to look at that. So the talent acquisition team now, you know, needs to understand sort of where can we say that here's a core group of employees, right? And that's sort of what the talent acquisition team primarily focuses on today, right, which is, you know, permanent employee hiring, for as much as we can say anything's permanent. So figure that there's that core group there. But then also, as we look at how, you know, talent can contribute differently, we could also think about that there are internal project teams. And so this is really speaking to how do we better map talent to the business needs to enable business, right? We've got a core group. We've got these internal project teams. And then we also have a different definition of what external recruitment can look like, and that it's not just about bringing in people that are for these so-called permanent roles as an employee, but that there's also an opportunity to look at it and say, well, where does the contingent workforce fit in? And it's interesting because we've been doing some work around this with Future of Talent and have been you know, undertaking some research around this. And it's usually around a 60-40 split, with it being 60% sitting in procurement. And think about that. We're taking talent that's coming into the organization to work, but we put them with procurement because basically it's got to solve a problem, right, how they get paid. But as you think about some of the demographic shifts and how people want to work and they want that flexibility and potentially will come in and out of organizations for project-based work, is there an opportunity to think about that differently? And that's why I get really super excited as well about these ideas around social recruiting and what it means to build a more engaged community of potential talent. And I believe, I'll put my stake in the ground here, I believe that the competition for contingent talent for this external group that will come in and out of the organization and work on projects will become incredibly competitive. You know, and some of that's driven by boomers who are going to need to continue to work but want a very different type of relationship with work. But the organizations need that knowledge base coming in and out of the company. And some of it's going to come from Gen Y and obviously in between, but I think those will be the two dominant groups. So I think that's got to be a key piece. And then lastly, in partnership with HR, I think talent acquisition has an opportunity to get more involved with internal talent movement. So that, you know, again, just to recap, it's more about, you know, becoming a hub for talent resource management so that as a business needs something, there's like a single place they go for the people that really understand how to find the right individual with the right skill set, the right cultural fit, and the right experience to map to that business.
Susan, awesome. Thanks so much. Susan, Shauna, Susan, very well prepared for that question.
Oh, totally.
Very impressive.
It's good that someone is.
My own 500 talent acquisition department, too.
Jennifer, what do you think?
Oh, well, if you gave me one, there'd be trouble. It would really come down to, for me, again, I'd have to match myself to the right culture. I want to work in a place that's going to allow me to do some new and creative things and be a little outside the box. So, you know, if you gave me a talent Fortune 500 talent acquisition job, I'd first see if it was the right fit for me because I want to work in organizations that kind of want to win. And I want to work for a leader and a leadership team that understands how important understanding the culture and the employment brand and getting our employees to be brand ambassadors and go out and help us to recruit so that we can actually acquire the talent that we need. So if there's a lot of stuff that's broken and nobody at the top is interested in either understanding what's broken or fixing it, then I'm not your girl. But if you are, even if there's lots of problems today, if we're interested in fixing them, that's something I could totally get on board with, and then I think we can go out and hire the right talent to do amazing things in our organization if we're empowered and free to do some creative things. And sure, some of that's social recruiting, but some of it's whatever's what's next, and I'm very interested in what's next.
Jennifer, Susan, thanks so much for that. I have plenty more to say, but it's going to have to go to the after show because we're about up against
right.
it. Shauna, do me a favor. Open up all the lines that are called in now. If anybody wants to hang out on the HR Happy Hour after show, you need to call in right now on 646-378-1086. We'll open up all the lines for the after show. I'm staying on the line until the LeBron announcement happens because I feel like I just don't want to be alone, Shauna, quite frankly.
Oh, in case it goes bad.
That way. I do not want to be alone when the announcement happens. Because
Steve.
I believe my Knicks will win the LeBron lottery tonight, and
he's
want to share that experience
Cleveland.
With people.
He's
so, Shauna will take care of that and call in if you want to be a part of that. Susan, you first. Anything you want to mention? Where you'll be? Where we can find you? Anything at all?
Well, I'm going to be quite a few places. I plan on going to ERE. I'll be at the Social Recruiting Summit, and then of course,
Yay.
The Institute has their. We have our big annual retreat every October, and that is in beautiful. Grounds of Asilomar right on the California coast, and certainly happy to talk to anybody that might be interested in attending.
Great. Susan, thanks so much, and let's make sure we tweet out the link to that information on the HR Happy Hour hashtag so folks can see that. Jennifer, real quick, you got 30 seconds. Where can we find you? Where will you be in the next little while?
I'm omnipresent. You can find me everywhere, certainly on Twitter. You can always find me on Twitter and at unbridledtalent.com.
Fantastic. Susan and Jennifer, thank you so much for coming on the
show
tonight.
Thanks,
There's
guys.
Lots to still talk about. The whole culture thing, we could do another series of shows about, and hopefully we will, and you guys can maybe come back and participate in that as well. Everybody else, thanks so much. Paul, Bill, Brian, thanks so much. Hang out on the after show. Call in if you want to get get involved in that. And thanks so much from the HR Happy Hour. Good night, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to this episode of HR Happy Hour, sponsored by Acquire, a leading provider of workforce planning and analytics solutions and enthusiastic proponent of free stuff. Go to aquire.com/downloads for free software trials, free webinars, free podcasts, free case studies, and more. Did we mention it's all free? Acquire.com/downloads. Who doesn't like freebies?
Steve, is it not working?
All right, well, I'm still here.
I guess the music didn't want to work tonight.
No, it didn't. I tried to play another outgoing song, but it died. So fair enough. But,
oops.
Susan and Jennifer, you're still with us. Fantastic job tonight. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, guys. That was great.
It was fun. We went down the culture path. Hopefully that was okay. But
that's fine.
That's my fault.
That's
your
fault.
Damn you, Bill.
As soon as we do, it just blows up. People love that. We've done a couple
of
culture shows.
Oh, they totally do.
I mean, we could do those shows every month, probably. Amazing. Mm. Hey, let's do a quick roll call. Who else is on the line and can hear me right now?
China Gorman.
Hi, China.
Hey, China.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hello, Bill.
Hi, China.
Trisha's still on.
Hi, Trisha.
Here.
Paul, you still with us?
Yep, I'm here.
All right, Paul. Hey, I heard a late rumor, LeBron to the Timberwolves. I did.
Yeah, if that happens, I'm going to have to yell for a medic in 911.
I'm not even making that up.
I won't know what to do with myself.
John from Miami's here.
Woo. Oh, hey!
Hey, guys.
Did you get
Who's
any?
That? I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear that last person. Who was that?
Cigar SPHR.
Johnny, how you doing, buddy?
Doing great. Doing great.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. My buddy. Great.
Wait a minute, I didn't get a welcome like that, Steve. What's up with that?
I know, but I got a lot of heat from you know my little joke about oh it's just us girls talking. So I gotta get it back into sort of my manly kind of thing here.
Oh.
Oh, really?
Hey, I'm gonna tweet out that you like the guys better.
Oh!
No. What Paul?
I got nothing. I'm not going anywhere on this one. I'm just sticking with the pants being down part. Everything else is you guys.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. Anyone else on the line who hasn't sort of spoken up?
Right, I think people are being shy.
That's fine. Look, I don't really have a plan for the after show other than...
We never really do.
I was going to watch the LeBron kind of announcement, and I am. So
so is this not where we give ourselves...
I have no idea who you're talking about.
LeBron conversation? Who is this man?
I've seen thousands and thousands of tweets.
Think a darker, taller David Beckham.
Yeah, it'd be like if Beckham or Rooney at the height of their skills and in the prime of their career was leaving their club to go to a new club, but hadn't
Maybe.
Told anybody what club they were going to, and then was going to go on television live and make that announcement of what club they were going to.
I actually thought it was classy, and he moved up a couple of notches in my estimation when he made them send the fees for this hour-long deal to the Boys and Girls Club of America.
Right, yeah.
That was very cool.
I think it's worse than that. I think it's if Beckham decided he was going to change his citizenship to Germany and he were to go play there. The guy's selling out his home team, and he's going to move down to Miami. Man, those guys better win. If not, they're going to be a laughing stock.
I just keep going to Miami, though. I don't buy it. I'm just not – I don't. I just don't see Miami with them.
If he wins, he's going to be bigger than Marino in this town.
Sure.
I know, but, I mean, they'll have nobody else to fill out that roster. I know Wade is awesome and LeBron and Bosch, but – you're going to find five guys off the turnip truck to fill out that roster. You have no more money to pay anybody.
I bet you'd go, would you, Steve?
I would play there, absolutely.
there's four more guys we got to get a hold of off that turnip truck now.
Oh, my.
When I'm over next week, you'll have to take me to one of these strange games.
I want to know from Trish which Red Lobster she's at.
Which Red Lobster? I am in Fairview Heights, Illinois.
Cool.
Have you been there?
I have. I'm a St. Louis girl.
I know. I figured you've been here. Yeah, so it's right near my house.
My husband loves Red Lobster so much. We've been to the one on 70 just west. Just west of the airport, which is the nastiest Red Lobster on the planet.
Yeah, I believe that.
Can I make an observation? Is anybody, Paul, are you watching ESPN right now? Anyone else watching ESPN
right now? Yep. I am. I've got it on.
If Stuart Scott's tie was any wider, it would be a smock. I mean,
where did they get this stuff?
That is ridiculous, Stuart Scott.
Oh, my
God. Are you kidding me?
I love it.
Did you know that's starting to bother me?
Horrible. I mean, you might as well put on the tie as a shirt at this point.
Okay. Of all things, I'm going to take us away from sports and back to some of this conversation from tonight. Here's an observation. Yep, I really am. I'm going to drop the sports for a minute. It's going to shock you all. There have been some companies that have been getting some accolades here locally about having this really cool employer brand. So it's going to be my rant for tomorrow on my blog because I figured I'd had another one after today. But yeah. How many people within our, you know, the candidate pool community who are saying, how did XYZ company get known for having such a cool employer brand? It's a bunch of crap.
Yep.
And it goes back to the conversations from earlier about when they talk, I think it was Susan talking about if you're going to be, into the social media stuff and then you show up and you can't log into Facebook while at your work, it's, this branding thing can be the coolest thing. I mean, maybe you actually have a BMW, but to borrow a Sarah Palin thing, it also could be putting lipstick on a pig, too. And I wonder about when people are tossing these phrases around internally, are they really matching what the reputation is? And how are they going to work around that as things go forward?
But you know, as a recruiter, Paul, how many times do you take a job spec from somebody, and they've worked for the organisation for a long time, and they don't actually really know what their culture is.
Yeah.
And I don't know that organizations are really worried about their brand at this point. I mean, I think some of the major ones are, but I think there's a lot of just smaller companies in the country who they really could care less, quite honestly. You know.
Well, and I think that's its own sort of specific kind of culture, right? We don't care. It's just all about the bottom line, and as it relates to our talent, there's lots more where you came from. So, and that's a culture that produces the kinds of results that they're looking for, at least in the short term. I'm really interested, though, in the question and the conversation between an employer brand that the marketing department is creating. And the truth about the employer brand, which is what the employees are living. And at some point, if there's a disconnect, it will out. And it will impact their ability to recruit the kind of talent they think they want, right? I mean, the truth always comes out.
I agree.
Well, that's where I think it's about having a realistic communication of what your employer brand actually is, that it's the truth, rather than what you want it to be. And I think too much of it is tied up in marketing bull and buzzwords and saying, oh, we're this engaging and tree-hugging, loving organization. The other thing you have to factor in is that you get subcultures as well, particularly in larger organizations where you have to understand not just the culture of the organization, but the culture of that leader.
Right. Bill, that's exactly right. So we've got this, and I think the social media piece is this is what I'm really interested in watching. The social media piece is kind of the bridge between the truth about what the employer brand is, what the employees live, right, and what the marketing department has concocted that says, you know, so here's what the CEO said the values are, and so ipso facto, here's what our employee, our employee brand is. And it's the bridge with social media, I think, that gets the truth out, you know, really, really pretty quickly. And I think really, I can't remember who said it. I don't remember if it was at a SHRM conference or one of these great HR happy hour discussions, but the need for forward-thinking organizations to be having their HR folks and their marketing folks joined at the hip so that the truth really does come out. And
so
if
market,
we really...
They market the real message.
Exactly, exactly. And if the message about the culture that's aspirational... is really what the organization wants to put out, then what can HR do to make that aspirational state happen, you know, more quickly than otherwise?
Yeah. I describe it when I'm talking in my presentation, I talk about employee branded rather than employment brand.
Mm.
Which
that's
is
a
all
good distinction. Yep.
You know, and I think that's actually what it's all about is what are your employees creating? Because I get really confused. I get really confused even now, depending who I'm talking to and what their job is and what an employer brand is.
Yeah, you know, it's funny too, and I think sometimes this idea of the employer brand and the perception and sort of this whole sort of complex persona that organizations are trying to create, it doesn't always sort of affect the people who they're trying to attract the same way. And I'll give you an example. You know, I teach in a master's class in RIT here in Rochester. I'm teaching right now. And every class, I've done it 3 years, right? And I always ask the students who are mostly working professionals, working, you know, to pursue their master's degree and sort of their HR people. And I always ask them about, you know, what companies they look to go join, how they feel about the sort of application processes and their perceptions of companies. And every time I ask the students, they always come back almost overwhelmingly the same way. I just want to, like, find opportunities on Monster or Career Builder. Like, that's how I look, and that's what that resonates with them, you know, because it's mainly because it's a shallow sort of reasoning, certainly, because it's mostly about the simplicity of sort of going onto a site like Monster or Career Builder and seeing all these different opportunities and clicking a button and hitting apply and you're done, right? And they're sort of thinking about it narrowly, certainly, but it's the way they're thinking about it. And these are, you know, pretty good candidates. They're smart.
Yeah, all of the research that came out of JobSite, who you know, and they spent quite a lot of money on that, it came back that all of the talk that we consultants were saying about candidate experience and interview videos and help and all the rest of it, what the job seekers were saying is, actually, I want two things. Number one, I want a job, and number two, I want it to be really easy to apply for. The rest of it's dressing.
Yeah, that's consistent with what, at least, you know, in my unscientific survey of small groups of students, they've indicated to me as well. Very consistent, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
I just wanted to make a quick point.
Go ahead, John, is that you? Go ahead.
I just wanted to make a real quick point. It's okay, Bill. I owe you a phone call anyway, and I'll catch up with you soon.
We'll talk soon.
Yeah, I just want to make a point. I've done some, you know, out of the echo chamber networking here in Miami, and one of the things I noticed specifically, and I don't want to rag on my marketing brethren, but they, you know, the divide between understanding an employment brand and creating an employment brand and working with HR is huge.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, the chasm, it's so wide. And here I am thinking it's not that bad. These are really smart people. They're all into the whole social networking thing. We spent 2.5 hours arguing about Facebook privacy, and they were all pure marketing people in the room. And no one understood the concept of it. It was mind-boggling how scary it was to see this divide. And I think there's a lot of work that has to get done there. And my question is, who's going to build that bridge? If they're not listening and they're going off, the chasm just keeps getting wider.
You know, John, I think we're going to build that bridge because I think we focus so much on how we're going to build that bridge with the HR people who aren't doing it. But, you know, personally, I think I'm lucky because the marketing department at the hospital that I'm at, they are amazingly ready to jump on board with HR. You know, they're excited about it. So I think that if someone from HR who has an understanding of social media can be that bridge, you might find they'd be more open to it too. But I mean, it sounds like you're still getting a lot of resistance because is it they don't understand the privacy, or they just disagree with your approach to it, or what were you finding?
I just think that they're it's such a myopic view, and it's more about how do we sell product. I mean, the fact it was just very scary to see, and the myopic view of just it was pure marketing. It was how do we sell this product? How do we reach the masses? It wasn't HR and employment branding were sad afterthoughts.
Well, the wisest marketing man I know on the planet actually said recently on a conversation we were having, a public conversation we were having, he said there's no such thing as employer brand, there's no such thing as product brand, there's just brand.
Mm.
It's just what the organisation is, and I've really bought into that thinking now, that is actually about everything in the organisation, and we don't need to divide it or subdivide it, it's just what is the organisation.
Yeah, I think that might be true, Bill, for a well-known consumer brand, you know, but I mean, how many of our organizations, right, are not well-known consumer brands? You know, small manufacturers or service companies, or, you know. If you're Coca-Cola or Microsoft, yeah, there's probably a lot of truth to that, but if you're, you know.
No, I think even smaller companies, even more so on the smaller companies.
They don't have a public brand, you know what I'm saying? Like a smaller company that is manufacturing machine parts for industry doesn't have a consumer brand. No one knows who they are. Other than that,
Steve,
other than people who buy machine parts.
Yeah, but I'm not sure I agree with that, because those employees live in the community and they interact with other people at church, at PTA meetings, and when they go shopping, and you know, I think the employees by extension create and live the brand out in the community. I have a good friend who has a small manufacturing organization in O'Fallon, Missouri, just right outside of St. Louis. I think he's got 15 or 16 employees. But I tell you what, the people who work there, they may not be able to say what the values are, but they walk around with pride around their organization, around their CEO, around what they do, even though they're making screwy little lug nut kind of things. I think if your culture is strong, and if you've got people there who are, if you've got employees who are meeting their personal and professional goals, the brand just walks around with them, and
it's the people who love
know
the family
it.
Business.
Yeah,
that kind of thing. They love the family business. They love the fact that they can go to the owner of the company and knock on his door and have a family picnic with him. And those people would never want to work for Coca-Cola.
Right.
But what's the percentage of companies that are like that, though? Is it 10%, 15, 20 tops? I mean,
probably 90%, I'd say.
I just don't see it here. I mean, you know, I'm really tuned into the IT community here in Minneapolis, and you know, we had a large tech event that Best Buy hosted. We had 1,000 folks register, 800 showed up. The number of tech companies or software developers who were walking around saying, I'm hiring, and nobody knew who they were, and their employees are there not talking about their company, but they love it and they enjoy it and they have Nerf gun wars. I just think that there's this – there was a question earlier about how many companies are actually doing this well, and we couldn't say Sodexo. I mean, I think that there are – I will tell you as a search firm guy, and I'll be quiet for the rest of the night. As a search firm guy –
LeBron's about to announce right now, so you know,
whatever.
In Paul. You carry on, Paul. I'm more interested in what you've got to say.
I have not been this. Hold on. I'll be done in a second. I have not been this excited about business in 5 years because there is so much chaos going on within the companies that I see here in Minneapolis about branding and social media and. And coming out of the recession, I mean, there's, to me, so much chaos going on that all I'm doing is saying to a couple of my recruiter friends, let's team up, form the firm now, let's get ready to go, because we're going to kick some major butt these next 2 years while everybody catches
up. Exactly right. Yep, I think that's exactly right. It's a huge opportunity for anything touching talent.
I guess I just don't have the faith that these companies are going to be able to, you know, and I hate to say it that way, because of course I want everyone to succeed, but at the end of the day, I mean, there are going to be those who are going to win and those who are going to lose and those who are going to maybe tread some water, I guess. All right.
Yeah, the other thing that's going to happen is you work in a niche sector, and in that sector there is going to be this war for talent, whether you like the term or not. And it's going to be the war for other people's talent and moving people
yeah.
about. And that's where the way I think the market's going to go now, massively. And you're going to get this 30, 40% disgruntled people starting to come into the marketplace.
And, Steve, a good show might be one to do one on retention, because all
yeah,
I'm hearing the company here in Minneapolis is we got to recruit and
right,
meet new
sure.
people and attend all this stuff. I'm like, well, you're going to be stealing somebody else's people, and they're going to be stealing yours. So are you blocking your back door? And they go, well, we never thought about that. And I'm like, oh.
That's a great point,
yeah.
Paul. You know, and Jennifer, I never came back to this. In one of your comments, I wrote a note about, I wanted to ask us, and I never did. We ran out of time. But you mentioned career pathing and career planning
yeah.
and stuff, and I wanted to ask, is that really relevant, especially for the younger worker these days, you know, who sort of fully expects to, you know,
to
work 5 or 7 jobs in their career or 10 jobs or whatever the number is. Is it worth for organizations to sit down and do, like, these sort of detailed career paths and planning?
Absolutely,
for,
because I think what you just described is also a career path. You know, when we think of career pathing, we tend to think of, you know, how can we keep somebody here and grow them up to the CEO? There are multiple career paths within an organization, and one might be the 1 to 3 year employee. How can we get the most out of them, give them some entry-level skills, and they go on to another job? So,
but are organizations brave enough to have that conversation with a good employee?
That is the
Absolutely.
Whole rethinking talent. I think there's a lot of companies that are going to need to start rethinking that career path being, we only want to think about that for people who are going to stay here forever. We need to think about that for all employees. And in the future, whether it's generational or just the new normal, I don't think you're going to see people staying with employers more than like 3 to 5 years. For the most part, you know, 70 to 80% of your employees are probably going to churn through your organization. So how do we create viable career paths to get the most out of those people and not have complete chaos and disruption as we continue to churn people? How do we stop focusing so much on turnover and instead focus on retention of the right talent and getting the most out of the talent that we have when we have them?
But I'm finding retention is the big KPI now. That's how people are a judge that's going to be much, much more about.
Yeah, and then
if you talk about it from recruiter,
now,
yeah, recruiter's
but a year
point of view.
Now we're going to be beating up recruiters and HR people over retention when it's not their fault.
Right. I mean, retention itself is not very valuable. I mean, look, you know, the Titanic sank, right, and so many people survived. They were sort of retained, but, you know, a lot of great
people.
Oh,
that's terrible, Steve.
Well, right, a lot of the best people
well,
sort of
good,
gave
like
themselves
that.
Up, right? So,
that's
so other
terrible.
People get on the boats.
Is LeBron James really going to go play baseball? Oh, sorry, different guy.
I can't.
Are they going to retain him?
I like that.
Hey, I want to. I'm not done after all. Susan, are you still here? Susan's gone.
Oh no.
I got to tell you, it's you know, I've been really blessed these past 90 days between the Social Recruiting Summit and going to Fordyce and. And Susan, you know, Kevin, unfortunately, you know, had the leg ankle issue. But I learned so much from the two sessions I've seen them do for their Future of Talent here in Minneapolis last year and this year. It just boggles my mind when I listen to Kevin talk about what is coming down the road. And even while we're talking about the branding and the culture and all this stuff, and I think about what he's predicting and what folks are talking about, and I'm thinking it's like – a whole nother set of oh my god at a higher level of what's coming down the road.
Yeah,
a new set of rules.
I don't think that companies are adequately preparing for that for the most part. If I recall, like Kevin's is, you know, the preponderance of women in the workforce, you know, the majority of people in schools nowadays are women, et cetera. Certainly the generational differences, the contingent workforce that Susan brought up, it's all these things that we haven't dealt with in the past, which is going to be that, quote, new normal. And that's why I think rethinking talent, it needs, you know, smart companies are doing it now, or were doing it, you know, prior to now. But there's definitely going to be a lot of people that are left behind when things do start picking back up.
Yeah, no, I agree, definitely. Oh, man. Come on,
Paul,
Mariah.
We need to get you over to the UK sometime.
I'm dying here. I'm dying. I'm
yeah.
Out. Shauna, I'm out of content. I'm out of questions.
The after show has gone quite a bit.
You had all your little notes there.
I did. I had I had lots of notes, and I was prepared, and I think we're tapped out. You know, what I was told, and I was misinformed, was that this announcement of, you know, LeBron's going to XX team was going to happen between 9:10 and 9:15.
That's what I heard, too.
You were lying. That
it was corrected. That was what ESPN had said. The PR firm said that was mistaken, and it's not going to be for at least until the end. It's going to be the last third of the show. So you got these 20
more
minutes.
Oh, my God.
Are you kidding me? Are they going to drag this out? Oh, you need
yeah, they are dragging this out.
Is this on a primetime network or is it on ESPN?
ESPN.
It's ESPN.
Okay. So there's mine.
Which is really,
TV
Jennifer, that is a primetime network.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Jennifer, what are you thinking? What are you thinking?
I need to go put that in my favorites right now.
Well, listen, I'm staying on the line. I am staying on the line until the bitter end. And
really?
Everyone's free to leave as they see fit. But.
I'll hang with you.
I'm hanging. Thank you, Paul. Thank you.
Speaking of which, so let me change another topic then. So when are you guys going to Cincinnati for that HR Happy Hour show?
Anyway? We're coming. I knew, Shauna, I knew Paul was going to mention this today.
No,
of course he is.
I've known that I didn't get to listen live to the show where Cincinnati was thoroughly trashed about the HR Happy Hour road show, but I did listen to the archive.
Funny, Jennifer. Nobody from Cincinnati was listening. The show when you got thoroughly trashed.
Well, you know, I have inquired when Mr. Bowes and company can come and try. I will try to put that around a baseball game because I know he would like to do that. But
I want to bring my son and go to a game. Jennifer, let's just have a chat, you know, as soon as we can, and we'll figure it out. We'll book it, and then we'll be done.
Totally.
I'm enjoying this.
Yeah.
We're coming. I'm coming. Don't worry, Paul. We're gonna make it happen. So.
Uh-huh.
We'll get it done. So we'll figure it out.
I can just imagine the expression on your face right now, Jennifer.
Well, Steve, if LeBron comes to the Heat, you have an excuse to come down here and do one in South Florida.
Hey, Paul, John, I saw you're going to HR Florida, though. We will be there at HR
yes.
Florida.
Yes,
I'll be there.
Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
I'll be there too, Steve.
Oh, yeah, Billy.
Oh, cool.
Okay, awesome.
And China's going to be there.
And China.
China, you'll be there
yay.
Too?
Whoa,
yep. It's going to be like a reunion here. Yeah, we're going to be.
It's a dysfunctional family reunion.
I will be there. We're going to do a live show, at least one show from there. So.
Yep.
That's
can we get
really
dysfunctional T-shirts for our family?
Yeah.
Of course.
You know,
I acquired you some dysfunctional shirts.
Nice.
Shauna, we really need to, like, you and I need to talk, like, after this. We really need to work on some merch for HR Happy Hour. We should have T-shirts and mugs or something. We should make that happen.
I need a Happy Hour shirt.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We'll
need a Happy Hour shirt.
We'll figure out, because we got that cool logo now. What's that, John?
Steve, if your slogan was, we put the fun in dysfunctional, I so would rock that bad boy.
We actually have an unofficial slogan that, our unofficial slogan, Sidon invented it for us, the slogan was HR Happy Hour, colon, where H out pours out its soul. Where H out pours out its soul. That was
like
the slogan he had invented for
that
us.
That sounds like the stuff that glows on the glossy brochure. We want the T-shirt.
We just need a big picture of the minion on the backside, and that's all, folks.
just need a picture of Gurr. Unfortunately, he is a licensed character from a cartoon, so I'm not sure how well that would fly. But
yeah, but you can get Gurr a little shirt, can't you?
Should,
a mini Gurr shirt, matching shirt.
I do want a little shirt.
The shirt firm should talk and figure out how to get some shirts or some merch for HR Florida because.
Oh yeah.
That would be.
There's always Cafe
cool.
Press.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not to you people on the phone here. I'll say this. I wouldn't say this public. I'd just give them away. It would be kind of cool to.
Right.
Just do that. So.
Brand building.
Okay,
yeah,
LeBron.
Holy.
Miami.
Join the
what?
Heat? Is that what he
guys,
said? He's going to the Heat?
Miami. That's what Twitter
oh
says.
Oh, my goodness.
That's what it says.
LeBron.
That's what he's saying.
Oh, my God. John, you were right.
I'm doing the happy dance. And I just snorted.
Woo-hoo! Wow.
And I just snorted.
Going to the Heat, baby.
Nice.
I'm surprised. I didn't think so. Wow.
So will Pat coach again?
If he gets an itchy trigger finger, I'm sure they'll put him in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
That would call why not come back for that? Jeez.
Well, the paper reported today that all of the season tickets have been sold out. There are no more season tickets available.
Wow.
Didn't Wade say he wanted to have the current coach continue to be his coach?
I think I haven't seen anything about the changing of Sploresta, so I don't know. But, it's Riley. I mean, if he wants to coach, no one in this town is going to complain. They're probably going to welcome.
Yeah.
And let me say for the record, I'm a huge Wade fan. I've been a huge fan of the Heat, but I think this sucks for sports.
Why is that? Why?
I think he should have stayed home. He should have been loyal. He should have got people to come to his town and his team. Jordan didn't leave his town to go find a ring somewhere. He brought everybody to him. If LeBron is that damn good, he could have brought people to Cleveland instead of him going somewhere.
Ooh.
This is business, Paul. This is about money. Money.
Absolutely. But I also would suggest that you can make money in your hometown.
You can, but they probably offered him half the state or something. I'm not sure what. I mean, it's pretty ridiculous what people were trying to do to get his attention. I'm sure he's human. He fell
just,
for.
You know, what are they going to surround? I mean, those are three great players they've assembled and, three of the top 10 players in the league. But, man, no one else on that roster is going to have any skill. They don't have a point guard. I mean, I don't know.
Well, it looks like somebody on Twitter said that a quote from him was the major deciding factor to leave. He just wants to win. So he doesn't feel like he can win in Cleveland, I guess.
I don't think I think he's right about that. I don't think that Cleveland team was going to win. That Cleveland team didn't have it. I mean, wow.
Why is everybody so bummed?
I wanted to go to the Knicks. I'm a Knicks fan.
Did John Nicolaisian go off to celebrate?
Oh no, I'm still here. I'm not bummed at all.
He's still snorting.
Just very happy.
Awesome.
Nice.
Awesome. All right, guys. Listen, fantastic show. We're
really
show.
Fantastic
I
show.
Think, I think we're
ready
to
wind it down and go sort of absorb the whole LeBron situation.
Have to contemplate it deeply.
Don't
I'm just glad that I'm just glad
Jennifer,
the Earth is spinning on its proper axis. That's all I care.
Jennifer, thank you so much. You're gone, but thank you so much for listening to the replay.
Sure.
Bill, thank you. John, Paul, of course. Trish, thank you very much. Brian Wempen is not here, I don't think, any longer. Thank you so much. Great show tonight. It was a lot of fun. And thanks.
Yeah, sorry I took your show off track again.
No worries. It was a good show. It was fun. So,
it was a
great
show. Yeah. Absolutely.
Great show.
China, so much. Thank you so much. And
you bet. My pleasure.
Thank you very much. And we'll see you next time on the Intro Happy Hour. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
See you soon.
Hey, guys.
Thanks. Bye.